Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. I'm with Steve Hamming, psychologist and performance and life coach here at the Men's Resource Center. We'll be talking with Steve today about his work on performance coaching and how he can help others live a better and fuller life. The first thing I'd like to ask, Steve, is kind of, you know, what interests you in working with men, some of your own maybe personal experiences with masculinity and such?
I grew up very much in a man's world, working with 11 other men, all Hammings, and a lot of the traditional masculinity with tough man contests, jumper cables on our noses, sledgehammers over our heads. So that was my first exposure to what it means to be a man. Mm-hmm. Then I've played probably 35 years of softball, which put me with men all the time. And so I learned well the culture of men, at least the culture of the ones I was with, which I assume was fairly representative. And as I grew in my own self and my own training, began to see the difference between what I was raised with and exposed to and what I really believe about what it means to be a man.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing is maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, we're going to get into, you know, performance coaching, but your own history of performance and it's kind of evolved over time. It used to be softball and now you're doing some other things. But just to talk a little bit about some of your own challenges, well, mental and emotional challenges with performing, which is, okay. You know, a lot of stress and mind games going on.
Yeah, when I first started playing softball, ended up playing at a fairly high level, representing the U.S. and then playing in national championships. And at early 30s, struggled a lot with my own anxiety, going out on the field, feeling really heavy, not knowing, not wanting to perform, wanting the game to be done, not enjoying it because I was too anxious. And as I started and finished my doctoral degree and understood what was happening in my body, what was happening in my mind regarding anxiety, I could use my own performance on the field. And then when I transferred into the world of CrossFit and weightlifting, really use the energy from anxiety as a part of performance rather than fighting it. Mm.
So you're saying that anxiety could be a common experience for all performers, and what you teach is have a different relationship with it?
Exactly. Relationship's a great word. Every high performer that I know, both in the office and out of the office, feels some level of anxiety, or we could call it arousal. And the idea is to keep it in an optimal range. Too little, you go in flat. Too much, you go in, worst case, paralyzed.
Right.
So that optimal range and learning to manage that through breathing, preparation, thoughts, a bunch of different techniques that'll help keep it in an optimal spot.
Right. The interesting thing about you is that you have this unique combination of being this, you know, optimal athlete. And do you feel that your performance as a psychologist contradicts or interferes with your ability to perform as an athlete? Because if you think of masculinity, there's just all this physical strength. How do you see your work and your interior life, or the work you do with men on their interior life, is not making that physical strength weak? How do you see them supporting each other in some way?
Okay. Emotion in performance, particularly in athletics, but acting too, singing too, emotion is crucial in learning to appreciate what's going on in your emotional self and harnessing it and using it rather than fighting it or denying it or thinking of it as weakness. Really befriending it so you can use it to get behind you, right, as a performer, generally. Generally meaning you could be an athlete, could be a musician, could be a singer. You want some aliveness inside, and I've come to value that as an athlete once I stopped fighting it and thinking of it as a problem. And in my office as a therapist, I also want to help men tap into, align with, be aware of the aliveness emotionally, right, as they live their lives.
Do you think that there's any particular challenges in working with men, either as a psychotherapist or as a coach, like some of the training they, belief systems they have about relationships, emotions? Is there barriers that they can bring into your coaching or counseling?
Sure. I think I've experienced it's particularly hard for men, even though they've made their way to my office, to admit that they need help, and I think from another man. I think there's always that alpha dog going on, and to submit to me as the mentor, teacher, coach, I think is difficult for most men.
Yeah.
Even though they got themselves to my office to want to do it, that doesn't mean they're necessarily game to do it.
Right. There's a certain level of vulnerability, I think, in submitting or asking for help, and so there's that barrier of, you know, am I weak? Is there something wrong with me? Because I'm asking you for help.
Right. So, again, with my philosophy of more aligning with our inner self, appreciating our emotional life, they come into the office still wanting to just stay in their heads. I don't need to talk about feelings. I don't need to worry about my feelings. And yet that's probably the biggest, I would say the biggest contributor to a limited performance. It's not a mental issue, typically, intellectually.
So this performance coaching is a broad category. So see if you can break it down for us. And could you mentioned like musicians. And so say a little more about maybe the different types of performances that you might be able to help people with.
Sure. I think of performances, anything that happens on stage. The stage could be a field, a court, a literal stage like an actor or a symphony player. The stage could be an attorney standing in front of the judge.
Yeah.
So anytime that we're metaphorically on stage, having to speak, to sing, to move, there's going to be this confounding of emotional issues.
Okay. So it's the performance has many different stages, many different places. And I thought that was interesting. I never heard you say like an attorney, and a trial attorney is on stage. You know, I remember watching the movie Chicago, and they talk about, you know, Richard Gere was talking about it's a big performance, it's a big drama. So to be a good trial attorney, not only do you got to know law, but you got to know how to perform. Mm-hmm. You're performing in front of the jury, you're performing in front of the judge.
Right, right.
And cross-examination, you might want to be a little intimidating.
Right.
and very it's ingratiating and relational for when you do the direct exam. There's many different places that we are on stage.
Right.
Where performance is required.
And when we are, then issues like emotions, issues like limiting self-beliefs, issues like one's personal history, as you come face-to-face with power or with struggle, they come alive.
Right.
And it's really amazing to me when people come in and they start talking about them. They know something's going on, but they don't know what, right, until we start unpacking it, and then it becomes much clearer to them.
I would imagine even our self-esteem or our belief systems that we have about ourselves, like some people who might even self-sabotage their optimal performance because there's something that's telling them that they don't deserve
Sure.
To be at a certain level. And so they have a way of just kind of never quite getting to that optimal place. And it's all just self-sabotage. You run into that?
Yeah. I think of one man in particular that I worked with who, because of being raised with an older brother, and even though he was more athletic and he was smarter than his older brother, the messages he got from his parents was it was not okay to win because that made older brother feel badly. And he had a way of taking that into his life. And when he was about to win at something, and his wasn't athletic, it was a different on-stage experience, he would sabotage or he would limit himself and settle into that second place role.
Right. I always had this theory. I'll throw it at you and see if you concur. That Barry Sanders, one of the best running backs that ever played the game, was in a lot of people's estimation still peaking when he retired. And if you ever listen to his father interviewed, when they would say, talk about your son as a running back, you must be so proud of him. He always would bring, he's not as good as Jim Brown though.
Mm.
And it's almost like my theory is that Barry proved his dad right.
Mm.
And before he before he broke, got to a certain yardage, he stopped.
I have a Barry Sanders theory.
Okay.
From the bleachers.
Okay.
Because of my belief about how important it is to have emotion alive in our lives, in our person, in our competition. When I would see him make a fantastic run, he'd score a touchdown, and he would just hand the ball off.
Right.
My theory is he quit playing football because emotionally it wasn't that alive for him anymore. Mm. I don't know that it ever was alive, but I think had he been able to celebrate as one emotion, put your hands in the air, enjoy, smile, that's enlivening. And without that part of the game, here's the ball, I'll go back to the bench.
So it was maybe too much work for him, too much seriousness. And what I hear you saying, that part of your performance coaching would be to get people to feel enlivened and enjoy. You have the anxiety that's anticipatory, but then how do you celebrate and use performance to feel the boldness and the aliveness of life?
Right. That has to be a part of performing, if not during the competition, certainly at the end.
Right.
I picture Tiger Woods maybe 10 years ago when he did the fist pump, or Kirk Gibson when he hit the home run and he's pumping his fists. That kind of emotional expressiveness makes playing the game of sport or life much more enjoyable, much more rich.
Do you think for men, some men, not all men, depend on sports, watching sports or participating in sports to be connected to their emotion because in other places they don't give themselves permission?
Hmm. I hadn't thought about it. Exactly like that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. It's like they can experience, the joys and they can literally be okay being sad that the Lions lost again. Maybe you're not sad because you're used to that one. but I'm just saying you can see athletes, after a game cry and hug. And in when there's a lot of hugging and stuff, and no one questions their masculinity because that's a stage where you've arrived. And I think there's a way in which sometimes that becomes like a pathway for men to experience emotion, and we don't give other pathways for men permission to feel emotion.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Sport is one of the few sanctioned areas where men can touch each other.
Right.
Hug, crying each other, hit each other in the butt, and it's all good.
Right.
Try that at the office, and that's probably not going to be such a big hit.
Right. Or just to be able to show that you care for your friend rather than you grew up in an environment where like men that were brothers or uncles or your would just handshake.
Right.
You know, because the act of hugging was somehow that you're interested in sex or something. No, you're my uncle and I appreciate you and I care about you. But on the basketball court, hugs all over the place.
All over. It's okay to touch.
Right.
It's okay to celebrate.
Right.
It's okay to care.
Yeah.
To support. All of those things are sanctioned by sport.
Yeah.
It gives men a great outlet.
So if you are working with men and you're helping them with performance, do you try to incorporate some of those kinds of things, or you stay more focused on the performance, or how does that work when we talk about relationships and emotions in other domains besides performance?
Well, I think if the performance is a sport, I'll just stay with that because it could, as I said, could be many different types of performance. We will certainly talk about the value of celebrating, the value of, see, some sports are individual, some sports are team, so
right.
it varies in terms of whether they're alone out there or they're with people. But again, learning to value and appreciate that their emotional self is normal. It's not masculine or feminine. It's human.
Right.
That the physiology of men and women in terms of the limbic system and tear ducts and everything's the same. So these are human abilities,
right,
to emote, not feminine or masculine.
Right. So helping them bust out of that gender binary is part of, and I'm sure you've done some performance coaching with females as well, and some of the similar challenges are there. Is any particular age groups that you work with or that offer, you know, certain kind of challenges?
Sure. I think when it comes to this part of performance enhancement, I found it best for the athlete to be at least 16, usually 17 or over.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the final piece. They've done the physical conditioning. They've done the technical training for their sport of how to perform. And then the final piece is the mental, emotional piece.
Right.
I've tried it with younger athletes, and they don't understand it as well. They think, if I do the mental piece, then I don't have to worry about the technical piece. And it's like, no, if you've got an ugly form on a free throw, it doesn't matter how how emotionally sound you are, it's still not going in.
Right.
So I do think of, like, take a professional or somebody trying to become a professional baseball player. In terms of ability, when they get to AAA and the majors, they're all about the same. The ones that have done the mental work, that are mentally tough, whether they've done the work or are fortunate enough to have developed that as they've developed.
Right.
Those are the ones that are going to perform better. Physically, they're all there.
Yeah.
Technically, they're all there.
So is this something you do individually, groups? Is this, or both, or depends?
I can talk about the value of the mental game, the emotional, what happens emotionally. I can talk to a group about it. But it won't change anything for them.
It's got to be experiential.
Right. It's just because everybody's own personal limiting beliefs, everybody's own sense of self, everybody's own emotional range. Everything is individual. Right. I can't give that to a group.
Okay.
I can only talk about it
and
talk about the value
of it. So the educational aspect of it can be helpful for a group or a school or an athletic team. So is there, just to give you a chance before we end, to kind of have a moment of to brag a little bit, since you have had some experiences with performing, is there something where you could say that you never thought you would be able to do something, you never thought you would be able to achieve at a certain level, and in the work you did on your own performance and the emotional preparation and the physical preparation allowed you to crest over something? And is there a moment that stands out for you?
Currently, I compete in Olympic lifting. And every sport has its own peculiar mental preparation.
Right.
Lifting is like bowling, is like golf. Everybody around you goes silent, and you're standing on the stage all alone. And the need to pull your focus in, listen to yourself. There's no distractions to get lost up in music or screaming fans. I use my current competition, and I have now for about the past 10 years, as kind of my educational playground, training ground about what happens in my mind. Where right. does it go? How might this relate to other men? And then find ways to direct it for myself that helped me achieve.
Wow. I never thought of that there are certain sports that they everything goes silent. I didn't really mean golf and bowling and weightlifting.
There are a few.
Yeah, and then you think of like, you know, basketball and football. I mean, it's just outrageous noise.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to learn to kind of drown it out probably to be in your zone or this one.
You do.
Get self-conscious. Everyone's looking at me and just silent. I mean, the anxiety, woo.
I came from the world of CrossFit competition where they just blast the music. And so what you have to do with your mind there—
Right, is different.
Is very different.
Right.
And every sport is unique that way.
So it gets me, as we come to an end, this idea that performance has so many different manifestations, and the emotional challenges and barriers that you bring to it can be different depending on the sport, depending on who you are. And my sense is that you have a very personalized approach to it. And so if there's someone listening to it and listening to us today, and they're kind of having a little anxiety or hesitancy about, you know, giving you a call or hiring a performance coach, I don't need one. I can do it myself. You know, I got my own training. I can follow a manual. When what would you want to say to that person who's like reluctant to ask for help, for whether it's life coaching or performance coaching?
I think of the work that I do in my office very analogous to working with an athletic coach. Yeah, you could get in the batter's box and you could hit and you could take batting practice, you could swing 1,000 times, but having a hitting coach watch you, they will inevitably see things that you do not see and can help your game.
Right.
And while many people can do it on their own, I would say, but you don't have to. There's great benefits to having another pair of eyes on what am I doing, what right. don't I see. So I think of it much like coaching.
Yeah. So it's very freeing for men to know that they don't have to go it alone.
Right.
In life in many ways.
Right. Right?
Coaching, counseling, spiritual direction, whatever it might be.
Yep.
So, well, thanks, Dr. Hamming, my friend Steve, for coming here today and talking with us about this.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have any questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Be well and have a great day.